I'm probably one of the few people in Nigeria that has made so much money from speaking.
On a continent searching for answers, one voice has shaped how leaders think, build, and transform.
Prove yourself. Then come and tell me the principles that you learned in the book that you have utilized that is getting you the result that you are getting.
Nia Adesanya is Africa's foremost leadership strategist, a trusted advisor to CEOs, founders, and executives, and the mind behind Fifth Gear Plus Consulting.
Take control of what people are seeing, what they are hearing. That's where information is absolutely important.
For over two decades, he's helped organizations rethink culture, rebuild systems, and unlock performance, driving growth of up to 313% across businesses.
What you see and what you hear has a long way to shape what you think.
But before the boardrooms and big stages, he was a young man shaped by mentorship and a firm belief that he is a product of relationships.
In Nigeria right now, it's a crazy money-driven culture.
Very true.
Money-driven culture in the sense that it has even turned on our people into beggars, more or less.
In this exclusive conversation, we go beyond motivation into culture versus infrastructure and why every business must learn to explore and exploit to survive.
Listen to Nokia. Nokia told you that we did everything right, but yet they were chased out of the market. They were knocked out of the market. We did everything right. It was just one side.
From the failures of Nokia and Kodak, Niyi breaks down what African leaders must do differently to win in a changing world. This is the Frankly Business Podcast, where Africa's sharpest minds come to break down business, money, and the economy.
How do you guard yourself against the revolution that is coming? And what is the pivoting strategy for fellow consultants? It's another episode of the Frankly Business Podcast, and I'm sitting with an icon, my role model. I'm just going to go straight into the heart of the conversation. Mr. Niyi Adesanya, you're very much welcome to the Frankly Business
Thank
Podcast.
Thank you, Frank. You know, when I hear all those things, I'm a lot humble. And then I must say, good work you're doing.
Thank you, sir.
Fantastic program. And I believe that people recognize what you're doing and the impact you're making with this podcast. And pray you go viral. And pray that people start recognizing you, not just in Nigeria, but in Africa. Wonderful work you're doing.
Thank you. Thank you very much, sir. You've been doing an amazing work in the African entrepreneurship landscape. You're one who you have the biggest conference that you have, C-suite executives. We call it boot camp. You bring about 1,000 C-suite executives with tight schedule. They come, they pay millions and millions of naira. And
be careful about the millions and millions of naira.
Tell us about your journey. Let's get to meet you. How did all of this shape out?
Okay, good. Let me start by saying we're now up to 1,000 people gathered in a day, but hopefully this year we'll be able to get above the 1,000 people in a day. We've done over 700, and I think that's about the biggest paid event. Paid event. It depends on the kind of paid event you're talking about.
Yeah.
When it's a 20,000 naira paid event, a different ball game. When you have over 700 people that are doing some numbers, I need to be very watchful.
Yeah.
But definitely started from the place of wanting to make life better. And then many people who know me knows that, I came from the church background, which has shaped me and formed me. And then when you are from there, you always want to give back to the society. And that was the vision, that was the drive, and then that was what made us go out. I mean, we started from going to the campuses and then talking to the students and the campuses as far back as 2007, and we went to Wilberforce Island, Amasoma, for free, and we did that for 3 years before 2011, and 4 years, 2011 we got in contact with the telecoms company, and then we taught over 60 to 70 tertiary institutions all over Nigeria, over 100 times. There's some schools that were repeated like 2-3 times. Mm-hmm. So that's where the budding came from. And then you saw the gaps. We saw the gaps. We saw the need for us to step in and make some things happen, yeah, or else we will not have a country at the end of the day. I mean, a friend of mine once did a research, very interesting. I mean, she went around the campuses and then she was asking about corruption, that if they become leaders, will they embrace the law or not? And the statistics were very alarming. Hmm. I mean, I said about 90% that said they will be corrupt when they become leaders.
Wow.
And then the remaining said they would die being corrupt. that's a serious gap. And I'm talking about, this is about 2006, 2005-ish. And then, but that we had to go in there and make sure that we talk to the student. We went to the NYIC camps also. And then we see people like that who have been brought up with the sense of leadership, but sense of responsibility in some part of the society. But we feel that it's not done. It's not enough. And then we're still going to do as much as we can to make sure that we correct not just Nigeria, but Africa, sub-Saharan Africa, Africa, even the world as a whole. And that's where the passion came from. And it's always been, always want to give back to the society and make society better.
So you've been advising presidents of companies and CEOs, but let's go back in time to how you talked about a passion, where it came from. But let's find out about your childhood. How did you grow up? How did you believe that you had the capacity to be able to influence people? Because that's magical.
Well, I must say that there was nothing. Well, my growing up state, since you brought it up, and in a flash memory right now, I think in my primary school, my nickname was Headmaster. Why? Because I had the same bag with my Headmaster. I mean, I came to school, my bag was same thing as my Headmaster. So we started calling him Headmaster. And then secondary school, I was called Master. Master in the sense that because I do a lot of break dancing those days, and then Master. And not just that, I think I gave some people some, what's it called, 5 kobo to just be my bodyguard, to just move around my mate and everything. So they call me Master, Master, Master. And again, my father really taught us in the ways that brought us up in a way that we're hungry for information. So I would use my money for food to buy newspaper. I think it was Tribune and Sketch those days. I can't really remember Daily Times. And then those are the newspapers that my teachers or lecturers will read when I come to school with my newspapers. So that's kind of formed all those things. And I must give kudos to my father, although late right now, but there's some things he was doing those days that we thought it was being harsh and hard unnecessarily, but now we understand better. And then that's one of the things that we always tell men, whatever you're doing, just keep doing it. Your children will understand better. They may say you're not emotionally connected to them, but when they grow up, they will get sense and they will know what you've done. So that's how it all started. I think my dad did well. And then also, I was privileged also to be connected to another man, which Sam Adeyemi. And then I can't tell my stories without him. And then he actually shaped most of those things that you can see right now. And then as we moved on in life, that's the power of relationship. I have people like Azubike Shikwene, Simon Kolawole. I have, Aguiruku, Yemi Adedeji. I mean, people like that in your life that just pop up and then they help you shape the life and put you in the right perspective. And kudos to relationship. I'm a product of relationship.
The turning point for you, what is that exact point? What happened? How did you get to that part where you know that, okay, I have the capacity to be able to influence these leaders? Now, I understand your childhood, but there would have been some doubt. There would have been some kind of doubts regarding you bringing people together, talking to them, and influencing their decision and affecting their bottom line.
You know, for me, if I tell you that there was this wonderful moment that came, I mean, I just heard something, I read something. No, I'm more like a keep doing it until it works kind of a guy.
Yeah.
Try it out here. And I've tried so many things that failed. And to the point that I tell people I'm not afraid to fail. So I guess that's why most of the time I don't fail on most of my projects. Because for me, it's more like an epiphany moment. You know, you just keep going and then you have that epiphany moment. I mean, I just came back from the from England and then epiphany moment. I didn't plan it. And then let's have lunch. Okay, we had lunch. I invited a friend to have lunch with us. The friend came. I said, oh, no, no, I invited another friend to have lunch with us. And the friend came. No, let me take you a tour to Queen's Cross. And then, I mean, it happened. And then another friend came who is in diaspora. It happens. So you just see that it just keep happening like that. And then, but when you are a student of pattern, when you've been able to notice some pattern about your life, you know that you don't wait for everything to be crystallized. You don't wait for a specific word like that. You just keep moving because this is the pattern that has worked for you. And then that's what is has happened for me. And you know, I've helped people to organize programs.
Yeah.
I've been in charge of mobilizing people for people. So from there, I already knew how to mobilize people for myself.
Oh.
I mean, I did a lot of things in a co-hotel those days for my mentor. I was the chief organizer, everything. So I got to know what it takes to have a program in a co-hotel. So when he stepped out and then decided to go overseas, I stepped in because I already had the idea. I mean, I learned through somebody else's resources. And then, you know, I learned all those things and then I'm where I am today.
So let us now talk about Africa in general. If you look at the African business landscape, there are a lot of issues bedeviling the economy. There are a lot of issues bedeviling Africa. Africa is affected with poor leadership. It seems like a conundrum. You hear the conversations around, oh, Africa is the next big thing. Oh, Africa arise. At the same time, when you come in, you see a lot of problems. How would you, what's your take about Africa and leadership? How do you think we need to address it? What are we doing wrong?
I think the first thing we need to pay attention to when it comes to Africa is the kind of information that we have at our disposal and how relevant are those information that we have. And then, you know, entrepreneurship is solving problems.
Yeah.
And then when you're solving problems and problems evolve, and then once problems evolve, your solution also must evolve. And then same thing with leadership. Leadership evolves. The need of the people evolves. So leadership has to evolve. And then we are still trying to do leadership the way we've done leadership in probably in the 18th or the 16th century, which is more like, you know, authoritarian kind of leadership. I say it and you must listen to me, but it's just not done like that anymore. Especially with the advent of the Gen Zs and the Alpha generation right now, you know, they can't take all those things from you. So what we need to do is to ensure that there is enough relevant and time-tested information and principles that are in the society and people can listen and know, because you see all those things happening. Now, for instance, when you look at the government, what the government is doing, people still feel that they are not doing well. They are not doing the right thing because we do not understand what you look out for when it comes to leadership. When somebody comes into government and takes some bold step that has never been taken before, removing some subsidy and all those things that have never been taken before, making sure that the Forex market doesn't have three different buying points and everything. So that, those are bold moves. But because our people have always been taught that the reason why, the only way you know a working government is when you see road being fixed, not knowing that there are three things when it comes to development. There is culture, there is system, and there is infrastructure. We can't just focus on infrastructure alone. You must correct the system. That's what the CBN is doing. That's what the finance is doing. And they're correcting the system, making sure that we have enough inflow and outflow. And then again, the culture, the way our people think. I mean, I was watching Lee Kuan Yew being interviewed, and how he was able to change Singapore. And he was saying the story how, I mean, when you build skyscrapers and you go bring people from the shanty to live in the skyscraper, you know, the way they behave in the shanty is different from the way they behave and in the skyscraper. So that is the infrastructure. But again, if the mind of the people, if the culture, if their attitude, their behaviors is not worked on, then they come into that building, and then before you know what's happening, it's going to be a disaster. Now we see that also in some African countries. So you go to South Africa, you go to Ebro, and then the city center of those states, you see what happened when people move from a place and their minds are not reformed and shaped. They moved into a place, they mess it up, and then you can't even go to some places, even Santin and everything like that. So you see that, and then you realize that the most important thing for a government is to first work on the culture and work on the systems. And then before you even start doing infrastructure, my brother, Abuja, Kaduna rail, train derailed. Why? Some people took the rails from there. So what do you say? Some people are already removing some of the things that were put there as a second Niger bridge and everything. So you can put the infrastructures in place. If you do not change the way people think and the way they do things, forget it. You're not done anyway. That's why I always tell people, when it comes to governance, from 1999, everything, my best governor so far is Donald Duke. Because Donald Duke changed the orientation of a whole state, not based on infrastructure, not not Tinapa, not Obudu Katru Ranch. I mean, changed the whole orientation of a country, of a state, to tourism, ability to accept people, make them comfortable in your state. And before you know what's happening, that drove a lot of tourism to cross river state those days. And those are the things. But if the people are not well enlightened, they will always be looking for the mundane, not looking for the major thing, looking for the crumbs, not looking for the real bread. I mean, you see that happening everywhere, even in the traditional setting. I mean, there's a king in the southwest, Nigeria right now, who came into governance, who came into on the throne.
Yeah.
And then because he doesn't understand leadership, doesn't understand that leadership in the 16th century is different from leadership right now. You can see him trying to decide whether he's the strongest or he's the senior and everything, which is not advisable.
Yeah.
What you do when you become occupy any position is to ensure that your first 6 months or your first 12 months, even if it's an everlasting, you're going to be there forever. So what you do is to see, how do I make the life of my people better before I start saying this and that? Because we've always thought that leadership is you being in charge. No, leadership is not you taking control. Leadership is us giving you control. We have to give you the right to lead us. If we do not give you the right to lead us, you cannot take the right to lead us from us. And I think those are the conversations that need to be there. That's why I love the fact that I see a lot of leadership conferences holding all around Nigeria, which is going to help us a great deal, because the conversation needs to be out there. People need to understand what it's all about. People need to know what is required to lead, and how do you measure leadership when it's been done properly or not done properly.
If we go back in time, you talked about the mindset. How can we change the mindset? I want us to be very practical now. Someone, you mentioned someone from the shanties, you're trying to bring that person to, you're trying to elevate the person's mindset to be able to handle some things, build capacity and all that. But I want us to be very practical. Mm. What are the ways to changing the mind of an individual? It looks like it's a very powerful concept that I think a lot of people need to understand. How is it done in practical terms?
Well, the first thing you need to do is to, because the kind of information you process affects your mind. So the first thing is that, how do people assimilate information? How do they gather information? How do they process information? What are the doors to the information being processed? Then you begin to look at your five senses, because you touch something, it hurts you, it's a process. I mean, your five senses. And the two most powerful of those five senses are your sight and your ears, what you see and what you hear. What you see and what you hear has a long way to shape what you think. And what you think actually affects how you feel. How you feel affect how you behave. And how you behave eventually affect the environment that you are in. So what do you need to do? Take control of what people are seeing, what they are hearing. That's where information is absolutely important. And then media, the media must be able to feed the right information. The blogs needs to be able to feed the right information. What's it called? The classrooms need to be able to feed the right information. And all those in anywhere that will impact what people see and what people hear, you have to take control of that and then pass the right information to the people. And the purpose of this is to be able to change the people's thinking and then to change their behavior, which also, for instance, now, for me to change your behavior, to begin to behave like somebody that can live in a skyscraper, I need to start talking about it. I need to start talking about the right values to imbibe for you to be able to live in a skyscraper. And the values are very important when it comes to the culture and the mindset of people. And fortunately, in Nigeria, we don't have one of the most appalling thing about us in Nigeria is that we don't have a maintenance culture. We don't have a maintenance culture. And then that's why when you get into a plane, you see a white pilot, you more relaxed a bit, you know, than a black pilot. Not that I'm trying to be funny here, but it's just that, because you just feel like the maintenance culture is not that common with the black man. And then rather than, I don't know whether you've gone in your car before. I mean, you're hearing a sound and your driver is saying, no, where you go, manager? Exactly. You just need to pump out twice. I say, hey, what are you pumping there? Just fix this if you can, when it can be fixed. And other things. Now, also, there are so many things that we need to change. Also, not just the maintenance culture. There is, I don't know whether you notice that in Nigeria right now, it's a crazy money-driven culture.
Very true.
Money-driven culture in the sense that it has even turned on our people into beggars, more or less. From the airport, Chamansa, Ogasa, Ambassadors, and everything. Once it starts talking like that, people start opening the doors for you and doing everything. They're not just doing it because they love you. They're doing it because they want something from you. And those things need to be really, really dealt with. That's why the work of the National Orientation Agency is really cut out for them. And I'm not sure they have even started doing anything about that yet. So those are the things that information can help us bridge. I mean, Nollywood has a part to play in this. What are they promoting in their movies? What are they promoting when they are acting things out? What's it called? The conferences, everything, the classrooms. I love the fact that the government is even coming up with a new curriculum or syllabus for the secondary school.
Very true.
You can see AI there and everything. I think STEM and everything. So when you're looking at that, you're looking at, are we going in the right direction? But it will take a lot of things. We need to get back and make sure that this thing is has a strategy to it, principles to it. We think through it, and then again, nobody can change a mindset in 2 days, neither in 2 years.
What's the average time? How does it work? Because I'll give you a classic example. You hear things. I'll use myself as a case study. Sometimes you know what to do. You know, this is the right thing to do, but you just see yourself doing the exact opposite. And you're like, I've heard this over and over and over and over again. And not until I think I read a particular book and I now understood the concept of addressing things from the positive. And I do that with my son right now. So if I say his name is David, if I say, David, don't touch that glass cup, what I'm reinforcing is him touching the glass cup.
Mm-hmm.
So rather than say that, I can say something. David, play with your toys. Play with your toys. So I'm building his focus to go to the toy. So what we are doing basically is that a lot of people try to emphasize, they try to pass an information through the negative. And what we keep on hearing is Nigeria is corrupt. Nigerians are corrupt. Nigerians are corrupt. Nigerians are corrupt. When you hear that often, what you're hearing is the word corruption. But Nigerians embrace integrity. Embrace integrity. So I learned that concept. It's just one concept. Mm-hmm. But I'm saying, how is this practicalized? Because there are some things that are not within my control as an individual. I can't control what other people tweet. I can't control what the National Orientation Agency does. I'm not in charge of the NOA. I can't control what happens in the airport. But as an individual, when you see yourself in a system that is quite corrupt, how do you fix it? How do you stay true to Fixing your mindset.
So it's quite unfortunate that people will think that the individual effort can sum up to be a national revolution, a national breakthrough. But I beg to differ a little bit. Oh. There's corruption from the base to the top. So when someone is in coma, what do you focus on? Are you focusing on the leg to walk, or the hand to walk, or the brain to come alive? You want to make sure that the brain is alive then the heart is working. And then before you now start talking about, okay, how do we deal with the stroke? How do we massage this so it can walk? So same thing with a nation that is in our situation. So trying to make an individual deal with their own circumstance individually may not work, would not even work. So we need to have sound leadership. We need to just have somebody in there who can start from the head and bring it down to every aspect of the nation.
So is it bottom up or top bottom?
I think top bottom. I've always been an advocate of bottom up, but I think it's top bottom.
Why? Because, what changed your ideology?
Because number one, like I said, the analogy of the a human being in vegetable state, unconscious. What are you fighting for? The brain to come alive and the heart to come alive. That's the first thing. Not even the legs, not even, we'll deal with the legs later. That's one. Two, when you take the story of Singapore, and then I just told you, I mean, Lincoln Yu was telling the story of skyscrapers and people who come in there because their neighbor is said something that offended them. I mean, they're living together. They want to pee inside the elevator so that it will be smelly when somebody else comes there just to discomfort everyone. So what did they do? They now decided that they develop a technology that once you pee into that, the elevator will stop and then you'll be arrested. So... and the people now got more sensible, more or less. And then they will now get to their floor, leave the door open and pee inside it. So that at least the technology will not work, because when it closes and when you're looking for the person has already left.
Yeah.
So Lee Kuan Yew said that they had to create, what's it called? A CCTV camera so that they can also do that. So people were innovating. The government was also innovating to get the people. But the most important thing is that until you begin to work on that mind and everything, you will not get anything done. Now, for me, aside the fact that, you know what, individuals need to do this and everything, we need to be on this game for a long time. Nobody can change the culture of a nation in 8 years. It's pretty difficult. 4 years. We don't even do it. I mean, the government doesn't even do it for 4 years. Yeah. They do it for 4 years, because most of the time, the first 2 years is what you work. The next 2 years is what you do with campaign. And then the next time, the next 4 years, you don't even do anything. In other words, I'm not coming for a re-election. So,
I don't need to perform
anything like that. But when you look at Singapore, for instance, Lee Kuan Yew was there for a very long time. Was very, very long time. And he was able to shape, bring in a lot of, a lot of ingenuity brought into a lot of ingenuity into the society. And Singapore is where it is right now. And then you see all the Dubai and everything. They have one ruler from father to son, son to son, and everything, father like that. Saudi Arabia and everything like that. Now, I'm not saying that Nigeria needs to do that, but we need to find out way this will work. And I believe that people that always say that, no, they don't want God for that regime and everything, probably. Could we even try that and see whether if it could work? And then not just 8 years, and there's a continuity like that going on and on and on. I mean, when you look at it again, when it comes to infrastructure, you could take Lagos State as a very advanced state when it comes to infrastructure. Now, knowing fully what Lagos makes a lot of money, internal IGR and everything, more than any other state. But nevertheless, it was orchestrated by, it started somewhere. But could it be that the development that we are seeing in Lagos was because there is more like a continuity? Could it be? So once we want to change something, it has to keep going on the air for a very long time. Now, a good example is this. A child is born. Is born with a clean slate. His tabula rasa is clean. So, the child is formed between ages 0 to 7. So whatever goes in there at that point in time is what actually forms the foundation of the child's response to anything. So the question now is, what did we do? What did they do to us when we were age 0 to 7? So if you don't do the right thing at that point, now you have to be putting off a little fire and you have your work cut out for you. So if you look at the 7 years and then we look at the educational years of a child, you have a child starts schooling, I think 6 years or something. I don't know how it is now, right now. And then you have 6 years of primary school. Am I right? Yeah. 6 years of secondary school, that's 12. And then you have probably 4 years or 5 years. Let's just say 4 years of university. And then if you do the nursery school and everything. So when you look at that, those are the years of you being formed. From your 7 years to your 6 years to another 6 years and everything, changing people's mindset would take a lot of time. And one thing that we don't have when it comes to our own leadership here is that we don't plan long term. We plan only now. When you see road being built, it's just for now. We want to see leaders that are talking about 100 years that they will not even live in. What are they going to do in 100 years? And there's something called the law of time perspective. It says the longer you put into consideration what you're planning, the better off you are than somebody who put a shorter year into consideration. So if you plan for 5 years, you can never be better than somebody who plans for 50 years. I mean, you're planning for a 50 years that you never live in. That tells you the kind of mind that the leader, because the leader leads not just his generation, he leads generation, multiple generations after him. They want to have a legacy. Leadership leaves legacy. They don't leave infrastructures. Even infrastructure would now spell my legacy good about it. But I want to leave something that can last generation. And then you can change mindset in 2 years. You can change mindset in 4 years. You can change it in 8 years. You need time to change it.
This is very profound because it takes me to the world of business. I was reading something the other day and I got to find out that Elon Musk, he bought the domain X in 2017, he bought X.com, the domain, he bought it from PayPal, and he was one of the founding partners of PayPal. And it looks like he had seen the vision of him taking Twitter and converting it to X, because he said personally that he has a close affinity to the letter X and all that. And even his son, in his son's name, there's X there and all that. That's the power of vision. That's how people see things, not just short term, but the vision is 20 years, 30 years, decades, in centuries. How can Nigeria is flooded with a lot of small businesses. Somebody's starting business on WhatsApp. You see small businesses, and we run an informal sector. How do you think we can structure our businesses now to be more long term and have a vision to cater to the next generation and the next generation? Let's talk about our businesses.
Yeah, awesome. You know, I tell people this, that every organization must be ambidextrous. And there's something we call the ambidextrous strategy. Every organization must have that. And being ambidextrous is your ability to explore and exploit. Now, those two angles must be structured effectively and staffed. Now, exploitation is, okay, I bought a land, I cultivate the land, and I get the best out of the land. I'm waiting, what can I do with the soil of this land? Can I turn it into sand to build? Yeah. Can I create a farm out of this? I cultivate the land. I mean, you just think about how you can get the best out of what you have presently. And then there's the other side of the exploration. And exploration is you thinking about where is the next thing to do? Where is the next place to go? Where is the next project that we have to accomplish? And I always tell people this, you need to have a head of operation to help you with the exploitation. Whilst the chief strategy officer, which is the CEO, is talking about exploration. Now, if you don't combine both as a businessman, you may do well now, but I can assure you, 20 years, you're nowhere in the radar of achievement of business at all. Now, listen to Nokia. Nokia told you that we did everything right, but yet they were chased out of the market. They were knocked out of the market. We did everything right. Was just one side. They exploited Nokia 3310, Nokia this and that, but they failed to realize that there is something coming. It's called a smartphone. It's called the operating system. Now, how can I play in that game? Kodak did everything right. But where are they today? So there has to be that point of exploration and exploitation. And most people don't play that game. They only play the game for now. Let me get... You know, most of us, we became businessmen because we wanted to solve our immediate problem. We wanted to solve the problem of poverty or sometimes the problem of not getting a paid employment. So because we didn't get a paid employment, so we now decided to go look for work, to create our own business.
Yeah.
And then before you know what's happening, I bought one plot of land, or I got one plot of land for my friend. I sold it. I made money. I turned into 1 acre, turned into hectares and everything. I was selling and making money. Now, because I did that to solve my problem, it didn't make me sit down to now look at it. How do I make sure that I move away from just selling land to building houses? How do I make sure that I move away from just even building houses, commercial, residential to commercial? Yeah. How do I make sure that I move away? I mean, those things need to be, and how do I even make sure that I'm not just building houses? I look at my value chain and see how can I take advantage of any part of my value chain. And after I've taken some part of my, or even all the value chain that makes me build a house and sell, then I start looking at other businesses. I start looking at probably, can I stick my neck into finances and then start seeing if I can start one or two banks and everything. Oh, can I look at tech and everything like that? And all those things, that's where exploration comes in. And most people, they fail and they plateau because they only exploit, they do not explore. And exploration, you're thinking 20 years, you're thinking 30 years. You're asking yourself the question, you have a very robust team with you, thinking through it and asking them, what should we be doing? What will the world be turning into in the next 5 years, in the next 10 years? There's a lot of artificial intelligence now threatening everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody. So what do we need to be doing? How do we need to approach this? And there needs to be strategic meetings concerning that. I was privileged to speak at a board of directors retreat of one of the highest regulatory bodies in Nigeria. And then I was so blown away because I thought they would be talking about how to make more money for Nigeria and everything. They were not talking about that. They were talking more about culture and AI. I mean, for the 2 days. I mean, culture and AI, because they're just getting ready. Because that's what those people need to be doing. When we come to management meeting, they can be talking about exploitation. But we have to start thinking about 10, 15, 20 years. And every organization that is not thinking 10, 15, 20 years or 30 years, that probably you not even believing in, is not ready yet. And then they will fail. 20 years, 15 years or 20 years, they will fail. Because what will come at them, they will not be ready for it.
Let's look at your industry as a consultant. And you consult for companies, you consult for boards and C-suite executives. The knowledge economy is under severe attack with artificial intelligence. And yeah, it's audible to the deaf, actually, because if you look at what is happening, I could say I want to consult you, your company, and for a problem I'm facing. But off the top of my hand, just pick up my phone and consult ChatGPT, or go to Gemini AI, or even subscribe for a higher package that gives me, or have an AI agent that I don't think you have as much data point as an AI agent. There's no human who does, no company that does, because Facebook alone has over 10,000 data points on a single individual. 10,000 data points. They know when you eat. They know the place you go. They know. So think about Google. Think about artificial. Think about ChatGPT. They have more data points than any company in the world.
Yeah.
So with that in mind, how do you beat that? How do you guard yourself against the revolution that is coming? That's one. What's your advice for consultant right now? And what is the pivoting strategy for those for fellow consultants?
Well, for just to be humorous, I always tell my guys, no, make sure you make a lot of money so that when the robots start coming out, make sure you buy as much as possible so that it can work for you.
Yeah.
But definitely AI is coming. There's nothing we can do about it. We just have to embrace it and we'll probably be ahead of it. But one thing I know is that AI would not help people solve personal problems, emotional problems. There's no how ChatGPT can help you solve your emotional problem with probably your partner and everything. They can just give you the logical approach. But then listening here and everything like that is a different ballgame entirely. So, but definitely everybody in the knowledge industry needs to start thinking about embracing AI and everything. But when it comes to leadership, when it comes to relating with people, when it comes to bringing out the best in people, when it comes to being there for people, you know what happened now? When COVID happened, we thought personal engagement would not be necessary again. But we fooled ourselves concerning that. Everybody still wanted that personal touch, that everything. And then, can AI really deal with mental health issues? Can AI really deal with a child that has been neglected by their family, their parents? Can AI really take care of they can deal with the health thing, but when it comes to the emotional thing, I don't see that yet with AI. So there's a place for people to dwell. And again, like I said, once you explore very well, you know what is coming at you in the next 5-10 years. And then you always put people in your space to make sure you forestall that. Now, I always tell people this. Everybody in the knowledge industry need to get sound partners that are sound in artificial intelligence. As a board member, as a co-owner, so that they can let you know, is it the algorithm, they call it now, and everything that is going to come, and then you're prepared for it.
What's the next big industry? You've sat with boards, you've sat with, what do you think is the next frontier for emerging markets, especially Africa? What do you think is that industry that is untapped, that a lot of investors need to focus on?
Technology. I think everybody knows artificial intelligence technology. And let me tell you something. The ground in Africa is still very green, very, very green.
But are you sure? Do you think we can we take our way into infrastructure? Can we take our way into agriculture? Can we take our way into... So you think the technology is the major...
Oh, definitely. Anything that doesn't have technology attached to it right now, it's going to fail.
Governance
has to be technologically inclined, and even agriculture. Some of these don't see drones fertilizing all the crops that you can't even get. I mean, hectares of land, thousands of hectares. You can't get there. You can't even do it in there. You take a drone in there.
But it looks like I dare say that it looks like we were bringing the Silicon Valley approach into Africa. We're trying to tech everything and jump the process of industrialization. We don't have industries, jobs are not being created. What do you think? Can we jump the process of industrialization and move to tech? Or we need to come back to industrialization, fix it, and then we grow into technology revolution?
Well, it depends on the strategy. It depends on how you see it. It depends on what works for you. Because definitely for me, you don't do catch up. We're doing a lot of catch up these days and everything. So what works right now, let it work. And then we can either do, is it reverse engineering, they call it right now. Go there, do it, and then start doing your industrial revolution and everything coming up. We have done industrial revolution, whether we accept it or not. But then what is called for right now is to make sure that your industrial revolution also comes with the IT technology age right now. It has to be combined. You missed going to primary school. You missed going to secondary school. And then you have to write CHAMP. You can't say, okay, because I'm old now, I'm probably 16, I have to write CHAMP and GSSC. And then, no, I have to go back to primary school to go and learn primary school. We just do adult education for you. So we try to crash everything for you because you have to pass this one to go. It may take you 1 or 2 years before you pass, but definitely this is where you found yourself. Your age does not allow you to even go back there, but we can crash everything together and get you the best thing. And then you begin to look at the gaps as you're going on and then begin to fill those gaps. Because if you move back to primary school, you may not even leave there until you die.
So we have to come back. We don't have to come back to industrialization.
We don't have to come back. We can industrialize while we're doing technology. That's go hand in hand. That's my own opinion. And I think it's very germane and very, very, it's a good one. It's a good view. You don't come back. You don't want to come back. I mean, come back to do what?
Create jobs.
Jobs can always be created. Just has been created. That doesn't mean Nigeria and Africa is not doing industrialization. We have it. It's just like most of our industries are comatose right now.
Yeah.
But they're there. Just revive it. And sometimes you need technology to be able to revive it. Those days that when you had need to have a whole machinery to do stuff, robotics are doing it right now. You have people there. So why don't they just build the robotics and then bring it to revive our industrial revolution instead of us staying with what worked yesterday that most people have moved away from. And then before you know, you want how to do technology and you just realize that you can't even get to, and you can't even catch up with them. And I think let's do what is applicable right now. Whilst we get it done, perfect it, then we start looking at how do we correct the gaps that we have behind.
Your conferences are high ticket conferences, millions and millions of naira. You bring even sometimes you okay, how much do you charge for consultation?
I think it's
as much as $20,000?
No, I don't know about that. I think it depends on the situation that we have or the person or the client.
Okay.
I don't have a fixed charge. I listen to you for us to see what you're going through.
Yeah.
And then from there, I can now tell you, okay, this is how we go about it. Because we don't have product, we have solutions. We always listen first. Do a proper diagnosis, then before we know, okay, this is what you would need, and that would determine the price range that you will come. Because I can tell you that you need to buy, you need to fix your sickness with a Panadol, and then I realize that there's something else happening to the kidney that is making the headache. So you need to look at that, ask all the question, do a proper diagnosis, and then from those diagnoses you can now decide, okay, this is what it is, that is what it is, this is how we go about it and everything. So we don't actually have a fixed price, but the
reason why I'm asking is because you've been able to crack that code into making a business out of a passion. And it used to be something where people say, okay, I want to be speakers, I want to be a trainer, I want to be a consultant. And people say, yo, are you going to make a lot of money from it? And you've been able to crack that code. Imagine even superstars have not been able to do that because they have events and people that come, they pay 5,000 ticket fee, 20,000 ticket fee. But with people paying in the millions to just come listen to you.
I don't know where you got this your million problem from. Don't let FIRS be looking for me. Well,
so,
okay.
But what I'm just saying is, can you demystify the business of consulting? A young guy watching us right now, he wants to go into speaking. He wants to become a consultant across the length and breadth of Africa. And he also needs to make sure it's a viable business for him and know the future in that. How do you think
Well, for me, I think it's a viable business, and that's why we're out. That's why we're doing what we're doing.
Yeah.
We're actually doing a lot to make sure that it's an acceptable career path for people, and money can be made. And then for me, I have my vision, and that is to make speaking, motivational talks, consulting, keynote speeches be a career path for young people to go through.
Yeah.
And then we've invested so much in making sure that we turn it into an acceptable career. We've spent so much on branding, so much on our event, just to take it to that level. I mean, we'll take our event to the most expensive venues in the city. Anywhere we go to, one of the most expensive venues, just to speak that language to the people who are the elite. Because until the elite accept what you're doing, you're not doing it yet. So we need to let them know that this is has come to stay. But I would advise every young person who is going to go into consulting and speaking and everything, and speaking in Nigeria is not yet bringing the kind of money that you need to make a living out of. So I would advise you to get a job or to serve somebody who's already doing it. Someone like me, I don't just do speaking. I'm probably one of the few people in Nigeria that has made so much money from speaking. But even
are you the highest paid speaker in Nigeria?
Well, it depends. We have to check people's accounts to see whether I'm the highest or not.
Yeah.
But I think from 2010 to 2016, there was a dynamics that happened there when I partner with a telecoms company, and then that made me, even if I'm not the highest paid in Nigeria, I was the one of the highest frequently paid in Nigeria around that season. And then if you look at probably the summation of the amount and everything, it could come out to be probably the highest paid speaker in Nigeria as at that time. But, you know, like I said, things evolves, and then you have to move on to some other things. I have a consulting firm. I train corporate organization, financial institutions, and all those things. I speak for oil and gas establishment and everything. But most importantly, what I have more or less pivoted into some 5 years ago was to start coaching business owners, start mentoring them and giving them the necessary tools for them to be able to build an organization that is centennial in thinking and in approach. And then, I mean, build a 50-100 years business. That's what we've done. And then that took us to a different level entirely. So I have people who have been in my community that have done with me 5 years, and then you can see their businesses move from no struggling to becoming one of the best in their industry. And then I don't like talking about money, this is how much they made and everything, but they made good money. And then for people to stay with you for 5 years, that means they must be getting something. So every young person must go and serve their way up. That's what I would advise. And then you must find something else to do. Now, what do you want to come and motivate me on if you have not done it yourself?
Yeah,
true. So I said, all the guys who were around me then, and I think Lala inclusive. And then what I told them is, go get a job. Get a job. Prove yourself. Or go sell something. Once you sell something, prove yourself. Then come and tell me the principles that you learned in the book that you have utilized and that is getting you the result that you are getting on that job. Then that's when you have the right to call yourself a motivational speaker or somebody who's coming to speak and give me result as well. So young people, try and look for a mentor, serve somebody, get into the space, and then before you can say, we've done well. We've done well for ourselves, and I think to the glory of God, our event is probably one of the biggest paid events in the country, Nigeria. And then, I mean, we set the pace. People, people copy a lot from us, which is okay. And when people start copying you, just a sign that you are a first mover. You have the first mover advantage. And then, I mean, wonderful. Nigeria has blessed us.
So, on the final note, what we have a culture of you saying who you want to see on this on that couch, and you're just going to recommend someone and ask the person a question, a business leader, someone who's doing great stuff in the African business landscape. So do you have anybody who you want to see on the Frankly Business podcast and ask the person the question, sir?
Yeah, I want to see Femi Otedola on this platform.
Wow.
And it's somebody that I've always, I mean, thank God you wrote a book. Hmm. I've gotten a copy of it. I've not gone through it yet, but then I'm going to dive into that very soon. But I think Mr. Femi Otedola, your story is so inspiring. Your story has changed the mindset of young people, and it's been nice for you to come to Frankly Speaking Business. And I have a question for you. You talked about some money that you borrowed from the bank and everything, billions, billions. How did they borrow you the money? What did they see that they borrowed you the money? Because you know what? I wish I can have 10% of those borrowed money. But you know what? Sometimes you go to them and they ask you different questions and everything. But there must be something they saw in you that made them give you the billions that you talked about in your book. Can you please help us break it down? And let us know what we need to do, how we need to grow to the point that we can attract those big amount of money, not necessarily as a loan, but also as an income. Mr. Femi Otedola, you are a role model, and I would love to see you at Frankly Speaking Business. Tall one, eh?
Frankly Business Podcast. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Really, really amazing. Thank you very much, sir. Thank you for coming to the show. Thank you for coming to the Frankly Business Podcast. You've heard from, I call him Sir Nia Desonya. He's an icon. He's someone I listened to growing up. And this is a rare opportunity, sitting with a role model, with an icon. I think it's a blessed moment. I'm so happy about this episode. Ladies and gentlemen, you've heard from him. He said a lot about the industry, how to pivot and how to embrace change, fixing your mindset as an individual. That's it on the Frankly Business Podcast. I'll see you on the next one. Make sure you like, share, subscribe, and I'll see you. Cheers.